welcome to Hagmann, folks. This is the Hagmann Report for today. It's Tuesday, August 5th, 2025. I'm so happy to be with you. I'm happy that you're with us. Thank you for subscribing to our channel, following us on Rumble. If you haven't done so, please do that. Give us a follow, a thumbs up. It does help the numbers and helps our penetration out there. You know, it's been a long time since Paul McGuire has come on. It's been a long time. I'm not even sure how long, but it seems like it seems like years. And I think it might be a couple of years. Paul McGuire.us is his website. He's an interesting man. He's an author of so many books. Every one, by the way, is so important, I believe. They're timeless. The books are timeless. The information in the books is timeless. So I would urge everyone to visit and bookmark paulmcguire.us. The link will be in the program description box at HagmannPR.com. And I want to thank you, everyone, for your patience and kindness as we, as I navigate through this maze of issues that we're dealing with here. I'm dealing with, and I appreciate that. So Tuesday tonight, Paul McGuire, and he's also going to come back tomorrow night because he's got a lot to say. He's got a special message for us all. And Thursday, we'll end the week on Thursday again, Randy Taylor. So that's the way the schedule is laid out this week. And again, I want to thank everyone for your kindness and your patience as we work through this together. So with me is Paul McGuire, paulmcguire.us, author, just a good friend, one of the, and folks, we've talked about him. Yes, Paul, I've talked about you, on the various broadcasts in a good way. But Paul, come on aboard and, say hello to everyone. It's been too long, my friend.
Yeah, it, you know, when you said it, and I kind of like had to think about it, but it has been years.
Yeah.
And it's not just you. I did my own program. I continue to do, and my own things in terms of ministry, I continue to do. But I basically stopped doing almost all interviews. I mean, I did stop doing all interviews except for one, which I didn't really set up. So the thing is, it's been a long time. And the reason I pulled back, in a sense, I pulled back at the height of whatever influence the Lord has given me. I pulled out at the height of it. And the reason I did is because I didn't want to just, you know, babble about, you know, important things that need to be discussed. But I wanted to have something really to say. I didn't want to have to repeat anything somebody else said. And a lot of what people were saying, this stole from me because they heard me on your show years ago. Which I want to take a slight diversion, which will probably take a bunch of them. But to give you an example of the influence of your program and the synergy of me having the privilege to be on your program, I was speaking at a large conference in Phoenix. This was at least 7+ years ago. I can't even remember. And as I'm walking into the conference room, and I'm one of the featured speakers, I was walking into the conference room. I guess it was, you know, one auditorium was being emptied out and another one was being infilled. So there's all these people coming out of the auditorium. And suddenly this girl looks at me and I'm guessing she's anywhere from 24 to 27 years old. And it's just a guess. And she's looking at her cell phone. And I happened to hear you on the cell phone. And then I hear me. And so I said, this is weird. But I didn't say anything about it. And then she's looking at her cell phone, and then she just happens to look at me because I'm going into the auditorium. She's coming out to the auditorium, and then she's all excited, and she goes, wow, I'm listening to you on Hagmann right now live. Like, I guess she thought it was live. I don't know. She goes, I'm listening to you on Hagmann right now live, and I'm running into you at this conference right now in Phoenix. And she said, I can't believe this, you know, this synergy. And then there was a whole lot of other people who heard our interaction and they were saying the same thing. So it would, you know, that was a lot of bang for the buck, if you want to use that expression, your people that were listening to you was very huge and live. Now, this didn't just happen once, and I'm not going to go through all the times it happened, but it did happen all the time. It did happen all the time, and in the most unlikely places. Okay, so another example was I'm going to a car dealership that I had bought and leased many cars from, not because I'm fabulously rich, but I used to commute 180 miles a day to a radio station where I broadcast a nationally syndicated radio program, The Paul McGuire Show. So 180 miles a day round trip, I had an old car I would leave there and my other car. So I would constantly have to rotate cars because I was burning them out like crazy. And unfortunately, sometimes I would get a car on a lease and then you burn the lease when you put in excessive mileage and, you know, it's huge. So I was constantly rotating cars about every 2 years. So at this dealership, I probably bought or leased over, I don't know, 25-year period, including getting cars for my kids that are adults, you know, probably 25 cars I bought or leased from this dealership. So I'm standing and I get to know the general manager of the dealership as the years go by. So I'm standing there in the middle of the floor of the dealership, you know, the big floors of dealerships with their cars prominently placed. And he's about to, he points out a guy coming towards us in the distance. And this guy, I guess he's 27 years old. And he had already talked to me. He had already talked to the car dealership people about me and what I did and stuff. But I didn't know him. I didn't know anything about it. And it turns out he was a huge fan of you. So when he looks at me like, you know, from a distance is like, you know, I'm Ringo Starr or something. And so like he's bug-eyed because he's been listening to you for years. Okay. And not only had a key position in the auto dealership, he was also a pastor of a church, a local church. So he's like ecstatic to get to meet me. And he knows all about me because he's regular on listener of your show and watcher of your show. And this kept happening. Now in contradiction, if you will, I would do Fox News all the time. This was back in Fox News's golden days when I would appear, it would be on the biggest shows and, you know, 5.6 million actual viewers.
Right. I remember.
I don't know
that.
Where they're at now, but they're probably below a million. Am I right? I don't know.
Yes.
Okay. So this is in the golden days, you know, people like O'Reilly and people like that were the hosts. And so I would hit 5.6 million people. You know, that's how many people would hear my message. And I was always on to be the controversial right-wing two-fisted host with a brain. But I would never get that organic feedback. Or I do other big Christian media, okay? Some of the big Christian media, depending upon what it was, I would get big feedback from. But your show, the demographics of your show would erupt whenever I encountered them. And if they knew who I was, I could be in any state, any weird location, and they were vocal and they were live. And so in my mind, I'm going, this guy is more important to be on his show than just about anybody else's show because his audience resonates with what we're talking about. I spoke at my own church. Oh, this was years ago on Bible prophecy. And I was, you know, mentored by the head of the church, Jack Hayford. But when I had my book table in the front of the church after I spoke and people, you know, it was packed out. It was a 25,000 member church. I think I sold three books. It was embarrassing.
Wow.
Whereas when I would do a conference and you spoke and I spoke, and this was back when your son was with us, we would sit at a table at a conference and people would just like grab books by the hundreds over the course of the conference. So your show continues to have an impact, except as we've discussed privately, we're now in the age of super quantum rigging of our numbers, deliberate diversion of traffic flow of the demographic and the people that are on the internet. They're no longer getting you and me and many others so-called spontaneously when they look up a subject like the Great Reset. They're being diverted subtly into other channels that are being controlled by, to be blunt, the intelligence agencies. And that's why, in the course of this program, I'm going to mention briefly an attempt, what I believe to be, and I've only mentioned it vaguely once before on public, on social media or whatever. But I believe from analysis that this was definitely a hit on my life. And the reason is I had a lot of time to analyze all this stuff. And you see, Doug, the conversations that you and I had, the talking and conversations you had with Steve Quayle and a number of others, essentially embedded a verbal architecture in the internet that was widely copied and plagiarized. Not that we invented the stuff, like I would be talking about Great Awakening all the time. This was 10, 15 years ago, okay?
I would say 15, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but and I don't fault him for using it because I borrowed his stuff, Alex Jones. I mean, he had a great staff. And so I'm not saying this in a negative or disparaging way at all, but you, my wife and I call it, you recognize your signature or the signature of people you know in their words, in their writings and stuff. It's always a giveaway, whether they admit it or not. It's always a giveaway that they're actually listening to you and watching you, or their staff is listening to you and watching you. So it wasn't an accident that this term, Great Awakening, which was not heavily used at the time, starts to emerge. You know, Alex Jones is always talking about the Great Awakening. Others are talking about this Great Awakening. Yep. Well, they heard it. And guess, and you already know the answer to this, and the people that heard it the most and the people that understood it the most, the language and the philosophies and the theology and the cultural analysis that you and I and others were embedding in the world brain or the internet was heavily, copiously copied by the intelligence agencies and specifically the psyops departments of the intelligence agencies. They ruthlessly, if you will, borrowed our language and torqued it turned it and shaped it to use it for their own purposes, which is, you know, I don't knock them for that per se, but they used it more than anybody. But then as the years continued to move by, you find that the copycats and the people that borrowed the terms that we were using regularly, they're everywhere. They'll never mention you, or maybe they will. They'll never mention me. They'll never, but you see unmistakably, my wife and I used to use this for years before social media existed. You'll see or hear your signature. It'll be slight little phrases or part of little phrases that you use or I use or that Steve uses or others use that you know just didn't get it from somewhere else. It came up organically in their own lives, and then it's imitated and copycatted. And so that's the warfare we're in now, because they've several generations have gone by, and the battle is more intense than ever. And the intrusion and the infiltration, you know, the level of psyops and EMF, electromagnetic frequency psyops, is off the chart. So often I'll hear some Christian talk about that, you know, he went into heaven and Jesus told him what was going to happen on earth, and Jesus told him what was going to happen in the election, et cetera, et cetera. And usually in my spirit, I sense an alarm bell. And what I think it is, and this is what part of what I want to talk about, is Christians need to, and conservatives need to, seriously step up their game, because sometimes, not all the time, they're listening to leaders or spokespeople that claim to have this experience or that experience, and somehow that authenticates the fact that they're, whether they know it or not, they're being used in a psyops. So exactly. MKUltra is live and well, not only in the popular culture, but also in the Christian media, Christian culture, Christian leaders.
You're 100% accurate. And Paul McGuire, folks, is really one of the, I would say, when I first began really studying things like MK Ultra, the sub programs of MK Ultra, Laurel Canyon, the Haight-Ashbury District, the what the CIA did back in the during the counterculture, the revolution, the Manson days, Paul McGuire was the man that really came through with the information, the evidence, the documentation, and has written about it too. So bringing all that to today, like Paul said, the Great Awakening, for example, the things that we would talk about, we still do, have been weaponized against us, specifically by the intelligence agencies. And those who think that programs like MKUltra no longer exist, please think again. They do. They may not be termed in that, they have the same terms, but they do exist, and they're more refined as well. So, but I have to credit Paul McGuire for all of that backdrop, that background data, because he was one of the first, if not the first person to really give me that education. So, and he brings up an important point too. You've got to discern who you're listening to. And it's easy, folks, it's easy to listen to, voices and messages that are pleasing to your ears. Things that you can listen to where you can get out of the car, run your errand, come back in and listen to it on your car radio or whatever, and pick up right where you left off, with really no depth to the message. And that's one thing here that we talk about is the depth of the message. And this is not that kind of show. So, and because of people like Paul McGuire. And Paul, it's just an honor to have you back. Go on, sir, please.
Well, it's an honor to be back. And without sounding like somebody with a malnourished ego that's starving for praise, and part of me is, I'm a human being. The thing is, it's nice to be occasionally validated. Whether we want to admit it or not, we all need a certain amount of validation. I mean, period. That's the way we're created by God. Okay, so I want to just like really briefly deconstruct alternative media, so-called alternative media versus mainstream media. So first of all, I'm sure you've noticed, and many of your listeners and viewers have noticed over the years, especially if you've been around a while, that the assimilation by young people, the youngest generations, I mean, the people that are like 12 years old and stuff, and getting older than that, so, but let's start at 12 years old, 11 years old, 10 years old, they are using as part of their normal vocabulary, words like MKUltra, Operation Blue Beam, Monarch Mind Control, you know, the butterflies from Monarch Mind Control. These at one time were highly classified, secretive language of the intelligence agencies, which were used to describe their various psychological and brainwashing operations. And the fact that, you know, they embedded hundreds, if not thousands, of high-level media people in key positions. The 80s, and it continues today. And in fact, Carl Bernstein from Woodward and Bernstein, I believe that I quoted him in my one of my books. I quoted him at length. He was interviewed by Rolling Stone magazine, which was a big thing in the 70s. But Rolling Stone magazine continues to be a source of disinformation used by the intelligence agencies. So you look at the movies, you look at what's on Netflix, you hear the so-called alternative media, the so-called right-wing conservative media stars, and they're all talking about these CIA operations, but, you know, 5 years ago, they were nowhere to be seen and nowhere to be heard. Who are all these people that have massive budgets? And you say, well, how do you know they have massive budgets? Because when I listen to their shows, I sample people all the time, and they're talking to their staff and how much money they're going to spend. These people have production budgets that are in the millions and millions of dollars. They have extensive staff, and it's obvious from the way they handle themselves that they were either trained by the intelligence agencies themselves, or more likely they were groomed in secular media, like the lesser positions at Fox and CNN and all the other things. So they're just reinvented. So what people have to understand, and this is one of the things that I feel is very important to talk about, is to communicate to people that this whole dichotomy of the mainstream media versus, quote, the alternative media, and the suggestion is that they're an alternative to the mainstream media. But if you really were to look at it analytically and truthfully, the current mainstream media is a necessary tool for people that are just so dumbed down that they have succumbed to something far worse than the zombie apocalypse. I don't know what they've succumbed to, but they have no brain at all in terms of an analytical ability to think and reason, perceive, and make the perceptions. So you have that, but the intelligence agencies are not stupid. They've never been stupid. So they created an alternative media, a right-wing media, a conservative media, whatever you want to call it. But the thing is that they have created these artificial social media stars. I could name names, but that would be pointless. And these stars, I know some of these stars. I'll be very vague about this. Russell Brand. I'm not into disparaging people, but Russell Brand has been around for a long time, including his relationship with Katy Perry and everything else. And Russell Brand, I'm not going to say anything that I can't prove, but I will ask a question. Russell Brand appears to, emphasis on the word appears, Russell Brand appears to have had a training and a background that must have involved British intelligence input, MI6, MI5, the Tavistock Institute, which he has mentioned regularly on his show, the Tavistock Institute, which is a famous British mind control institute, first taken off by Sigmund Freud, the father of so-called psychiatry. And Russell Brand, it has been alleged that he was a handler for some people, including Katy Perry. And so how does a guy who was alleged to be a handler, and then there's the LSD connection, the allegations that Katy Perry's father, who was a born-again evangelical minister and preaches at churches across the nation. I had the opportunity of talking to Katy Perry's father driving from a Hollywood production meeting of a film I was going to produce. This was, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And when I was driving from the meeting, I had to get to another meeting. So at that time, I took the Pacific Coast Highway 1, and I was up high on the cliffs on this road talking to Katy Perry's father. But I knew some stuff about Katy Perry's father in terms of allegations, purely allegations, was that he was a handler and a drug agent of some kind, allegedly, for the Grateful Dead. Because the Grateful Dead was, in part, allegedly, a psyops operation by the intelligence agencies to literally produce deadheads. And they weren't kidding around. When they created the Grateful Dead, it wasn't a joke that they were creating deadheads. It was part of a psyops to create a generation of people and boys and girls that were intellectually, rationally, educationally, historically, in terms of their historical knowledge, dead in the head. So the Grateful Dead deadheads was a counterculture revolution launched by the intelligence agencies. And so the whole LSD thing, which unfortunately I got caught up in because I was raised in a secular humanist, existentialist, and yes, transhumanist household in Jackson Heights, Queens, New York. My parents, we weren't wealthy, but my parents' friends were very influential and, let's just leave it at that. And so, the reason I experimented with LSD is because I was naive enough to believe Dr. Timothy Leary's lies, the Harvard professor who promoted LSD. You know, it was alleged back then in the press that Timothy Leary was really an agent for the CIA.
I think there's sufficient proof. There are, I think, three investigators from that era, and I've got two of their reports Yeah, I was just looking. They're in my office. I don't have them with me, but among others, yes, he was, if not, he certainly wasn't employed by, but he was used as both a subject and a handler there were others as well, very, very well known, that were inserted into that culture.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's a very, to me, when you take it from the 30,000 foot level, it's a very complex mosaic of events that were orchestrated at that time that really set this nation on a specific course. And I suspect that course, really, when you go back in history and then look at what's going on today, it's not too different in terms of the intelligence communities. They're crafting the culture today as they did back then, however, using different tools, different people, and different methods. Go ahead, sir.
Well, you're right on target, and you hit the bullseye of something that I wanted to communicate tonight. And that is, I want to just reiterate something that you know, that many of your listeners and watchers know. I want to reiterate the fact that unless an individual, and I'm talking about so-called conservatives and libertarians and Christians who espouse to know things, but if you don't know the bottom line foundational truth of the great spiritual war, the great social war, the great economic war that we're currently involved in, we are in the greatest war in the history of mankind right now, bar none. So the foundational truth to understand is that we are in mortal and spiritual combat and physical combat with a living supranational entity, SUPRA. It's a Kissinger word, the Trilateral Commission. A supranational entity, a globalist entity, the Great Reset, formerly known as the New World Order until they rebranded it and called it the Great Reset. This entity of billionaires and trillionaires controls the world and has controlled the world under various masks for thousands of years. So unless an individual really understands and really owns the truth that they personally, their family, their wives, their children, their husbands, the people they know, their church, their political affiliations, unless a person really knows and understands the fact that they are in right now at this second in an all-out war of unprecedented proportions for the destiny and future of America, because the idea of America was as put together by the Pilgrims and Puritans, who were strong Bible believing non-idiot Christians. The Pilgrims and Puritans gave us the American dream, not the contemporary American dream, but the biblical American dream, and which was based on Judeo-Christian values and a biblical worldview. So it is that. It is the remnant of people who believe in the Pilgrim and Puritan biblical American dream versus the occult hierarchy, which is also the hierarchy of the elite wealthy that is literally ruling planet Earth. And we are in an all-out war for victory and survival and overcoming. It's either what it's going to come down to. In a non-militaristic sense, which may not, because I'm advocating it or even want it, but it may degrade into something worse than a nightmare. But what it comes down to is that the struggle is so great that either, and see, this is what I meant when I first started talking about a great awakening, but the term great awakening has been degraded, so it doesn't mean the fullness of what it should mean. What I meant by great awakening is simply this. There are two primary foundations that we can stand on to know truth and to apply the truth. And of course, the truth will set you free. Non-truth will enslave you. So on one hand, there is the dynamic of intelligent, intellectual, scientific, economic, and so on and so forth, rational thinking truth, the knowledge of historical truth, pragmatics, perception, all of that is an essential area to master. If you're not mastering that area, you're simply the servant to the emperor who has no clothes. You're butt naked in the public square to anybody who has a brain. Okay, that's number one foundation. Number two foundation is the authentic biblical move of the Holy Spirit of God, the third person of the Trinity, but welcoming and walking and yielding to the biblically authentic Spirit of God, which can be determined and discerned on the basis of whether or not it is congruent with what the Bible actually says, and not just an emotional high or a psychological high or a psychic high. You've got to have both these foundations in place. Now, sadly to say, the left and what was once called the New Age, or whatever it's called now, the consciousness movement or whatever, they've always kind of understood that. We're currently, it is the will of God. I believe that impeccably it's the will of God to rescue America to whatever degree he will allow that. I'm not talking about, you know, what is it, Willy Wonka and the chocolate factory. We're not going to go up on a stupid telephone into the sky and then go into a subterranean cave, no pun or hidden message intended, but maybe it's true. We're not going to go, hopefully not, into some chocolate factory cave and get our Willy Wonka chocolate bars. Well, now, if Bill Gates has his way, we will probably get these chocolate bars made of crushed cockroaches and whatever the flavor of the day is. I mean, that's their openly announced plan, is to refabricate cockroaches and insects and mosquitoes, crush them together, pound them orgiastically with excitotoxins. And excitotoxin is simply a chemical that's super, it's like a drug. It super enhances flavor. I remember when they started using that, I would walk down the aisles. I used to be addicted to ice cream. I no longer am, because I can't afford the consequences. But I would walk down the supermarket, you know, and I would get Chunky Monkey, baby, my favorite. But I'd have an orgiastic experience, and I'd say, why is this Chunky Monkey so unbelievably good? It wasn't just the ingredients. It was the excitotoxins, the flavor-enhancing drugs that they mixed in with the Chunky Monkey. And then Haagen-Dazs used to be my favorite, but God knows what's in those things today. So, no, we're not going into a chocolate factory, but some people are going in a chocolate factory. Let me give you the definitive attributes of what the Willy Wonka's chocolate factory looks like in our contemporary generation. Number one, you'll get a sexy, they'll say it's a sexy 15-minute city. If you think a 15-minute city is sexy, you are a clown from Mars. You're a hybrid clown, a clone DNA replicant from Mars, conceived by Philip K. Dick. No double meaning for the word Dick. That's his actual name. The great spaced out science fiction writer of so many sci-fi novels that all the big boys like Spielberg and everybody else stole his material. But he warned of this stuff. You know,
speaking of him, Paul, not to interrupt, but sure. I received an email from his ex-wife. Widow. I mean, he divorced her and then he passed away. But after listening to a program of yours and on this show, okay, she was listening, and yeah, I mean, it blew my mind.
It's blowing my mind. So keep talking.
Well, no, I mean, it was just, as a matter of fact, twice. I think it was twice I had communicated with her. Just a delightful woman, but mentioning that she listened to the show and heard you. And again, if my memory is correct, this is a number of years ago. But the bottom line was, you know, very interesting to have Philip K. Dick's widow. Ex-wife, widow, to be clear, listening to what you have to say. So very, very, I wanted to make sure you knew that, because I don't think I told you that before.
No, I am so glad you told me that, because, you know, doing what we do, it's really very an illusory experience. We sit in studios or wherever we're doing the program. We may see people, we may not see people. Most of we do we're speaking and we're not actually face to face with the people or in hearing distance with the people we're communicating to. So it becomes somewhat of an illusion. And you're hoping when you're talking or choosing subjects, you're hoping that you're connecting with an audience that is looking for truth, and you're hoping that you are a conduit for truth and in some way doing something to restore America and the world, and to be blunt, to fight evil with the truth. You're hoping. And so when you give me something like that, oh, that's so great to hear. I'm so glad.
Oh, yeah. It blew my mind, and it was just again a pleasure. But that brings me to the point. By the way, the weaponization, the Great Awakening. I just want to reaffirm that. You know, the back in the day, it's hard to believe how this media, the venue that we find ourselves, has evolved. And I often say this, Paul. I want to toss this in now while I was thinking about it. There are enemies within. It's not like it used to be. It is a lot more. It's a lot trickier today.
Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely.
And we really have to be on guard with respect to, well, you know, Team MAGA, for as an example, only an example, in the political sphere. Well, this guy is a Christian conservative Team MAGA person. Well, you better not. I mean, I'm telling you right now that there are a lot of people who are not who they say they are, and,
right,
and those who present themselves as others are really, in my view, agents of chaos, as we would refer to them before. So it's very important, I think, folks, to really understand Paul McGuire, for example, is the real deal. As far as I'm concerned, I'm just a guy. Okay. An investigator with a microphone, been doing this for a while, just watching things happen. So, I just want to caution everyone, but understand this. Paul McGuire, having known him, understanding him, read his books. My goodness, his books. And folks, by the way, if you haven't done so, if you want a treat, go to paulmcguire.us and just peruse his website. But by all means, his books are just fabulous. Great information, unlike any other you can find. This paulmcguire.us. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanPI.com. All right, Paul, go ahead, sir.
Thank you for those words, and thank you for that analysis. You know, I'm turning around, but it's not visible. I don't think it's visible to your audience, but there's a bookshelf with books that I've written. I think I forgot how many books I've written. And my wife accused me. We have a loving relationship, but one of the great things about, I've been married to my wife since 1977. Okay, so one wife, one woman, and the reward for that is an intimacy that transcends the traditional monopoly of the word intimacy. She can say stuff to me that I need to hear, okay? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, people like me can have a tendency to inflate numbers. And my wife says, you didn't write, I think I said 37 books or 26 books. I can't remember. And she said, you did not write 26 books. And I said, I wrote 26 books, for crying out loud. But so then she's helping me a number of weeks ago arrange the books behind me in the studio. And it dawns upon her, because suddenly she's flipping books out, that, my God, there's far more books here that I forgot that he wrote. And I said, yeah, I did write it. I didn't make it up. For example, this wasn't a preconceived hustle. You were kind enough to write the foreword in the book Mass Awakening, one of my best books, which I need to reprint because we have a handful, and I'm very stingy about it. I don't want to hand it out to somebody who doesn't appreciate it. But you were kind enough to write the foreword to that book. And it turns out that I said to her, honey, you know why I wrote these books? And she kind of said, yes. But the reason I was able to write, I don't know how many books it is. I really don't. So it's somewhere between 26 and 36, or let's say. But the reason I was able to write those books was one reason. Excuse the vernacular, but my ass was set on fire the entire time. If Paul McGuire's ass was not set on fire by life circumstances, by warfare, by you know, all the stuff that we got to go through life, you know, it has never been easy for me. I suspect it was never easy for you. It was never easy for you. So when your ass is set on fire, and only when it's truly burning, you get like focused and you finish the book, and you cannot afford to have writer's cramp.
Oh man, guys,
I mean, when I started to write a book, yeah, the reason you started and you never got past page 5 is because nobody sets your ass on fire when the bills come due and they start mocking you on social media and all the rest of the nonsense that happens. You get focused real quick, and it's amazing how you get freed from writer's block and all the rest of that.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And I would also echo the fact Mass Awakening is all your books are great, but Mass Awakening was very special to me when I read it. You were kind enough to give me the advanced copy for the foreword and that. And my goodness. Wow. It's just, folks, there's no one book, but that book by Paul McGuire is fabulous. So yeah, please have it reprinted. Because
now that you said that, I have to get it reprinted. That gives me urgency.
Well, yeah, but all of his books are fantastic. And it's amazing too, that fire that you talk about. I think regardless of the situation, don't you find it, Paul, that here we are in 2025, which just blows my mind, because you mentioned you've been married since 77. God bless you for that. I mean,
grace of God, because yeah. I'm just like anybody else. Okay. We live in a world that pummels marriage. And so if it wasn't for God's grace, certainly not some inner nobility on my part, but God's grace and the fact of, you know, the blessings of marriage, they don't get sprinkled upon you from above. Sometimes they do, but you have to go into the mine sometimes to get the jewels that are there, the diamonds and everything else, and not South African diamonds, not blood diamonds.
Not blood diamonds, no.
Yeah. Let me say something quickly about Philip K. Dick.
Please.
Some people don't know who he is. So he was a brilliant, supposedly addicted to amphetamines, I don't know to what degree, but he wrote a lot of novels which were made into big Hollywood films, like, I believe, Minority Report Tom Cruise was his. Adjustment Bureau, I believe, was his. A lot of these really intense movies. Blade Runner was his. And that was originally titled something about dreaming of androids and electric sleep, or maybe you know the... It was a wordy title. So he wrote all these books, and many of them, at least 10 or 15 of them, became massive blockbuster films. But he inserted kind of precognitive, futuristic themes that had not happened yet. He embedded in his books and films. So if you know how to watch his films properly, he's communicating to you things that have not yet happened in our society, but that are going to happen. And that I don't know whether it was a gift or he had access, or maybe he dipped his toes, not deliberately, but maybe he accidentally dipped his toes in the MK Ultra soup. I don't know. And speaking of the MK Ultra soup and culture, when you and I first started talking about this, like in my book, A Prophecy of Future of America, going back, I don't know how many years. Unfortunately, there are copyrights because I can prove how far back they went. You and I would talk about all kinds of stuff. We talked about the Nazi rocket scientists, the Nazi mind control scientists, the Nazi DNA scientists. We talked, and then all of a sudden, Hollywood comes out with these plot points, which is fine, but they weren't talking about that stuff until we started talking about it regularly on your program. And by the way, you know and I know that we picked up a relatively large audience from Hollywood people in all facets of the industry. So it wasn't an accident that all this Captain America and all this other stuff, which was cloned from our discussions and the research I did, and other people have done research, like Steve Quayle, of course, has done an enormous research on Operation Bluebeam and all kinds of stuff, Antarctica and all kinds of stuff.
Yes. No, you're exactly right. You know, I've got some photographs too of Nazi. It's interesting because, by the way, my third book will be coming out
Do you have a name?
The Devil Within. I'm sorry. The title is The Devil Within.
That's good.
Okay, and it's a third. It's really kind of a continuation of the first and second, but nonetheless, going through that, it was a very difficult experience, and because I had to relive certain events that took place. But I said all of that to say this. The things that you and I have spoken about, with in particular of the about the MK Ultra subject, I don't think I've talked in depth about that with anyone else except for you, okay, on air. And I had to recall a lot of things. I had to pull files from back that predates everything. But I said all that again just to say this: the Nazi influence. Nazi occult influence that I learned from you was really retroactively verified from the investigations I did back in the late 80s. I just have to say that. And looking back at it, had I known then what I know now, wow, the things would have been a lot different. But this has been around for a long time, and you've done a great job of chronicling the events of all of this through your fantastic books, and again, Prophecy of the Future of America, Mass Awakening, and so on, folks. Again, paulmcguire.us. Make sure you grab a book or two or 10 or all 26 to 36. We don't know. We're still counting them, but a lot of words, millions of words there. But they're fabulous reads. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, that's a door. One of the things that I learned, I'm still learning, but one of the things I began to learn many, many years ago, and I sound like I've been around forever, but in a sense, I have been around forever. We live our ordinary reality, shopping, driving a car, getting gas, all the stuff that we have to do. It's not particularly interesting. And I remember going to, because I research and I'm suspicious about everything that I research. And so I have the power, because I'm suspicious about my research, of immobilizing my critics, because I've done my homework. It is not because I'm necessarily a genius. It's because I've simply done my homework. So I don't believe in everything about the word I'm going to mention, synchronicity, or synchronicity, however you want to pronounce it. Synchronicity was a term invented by the so-called Christian therapist. I'm not sure how orthodox his Christianity was, but he has some kind of allegiance to Christianity. Carl Jung, who was a contemporary of Sigmund Freud, the father of psychoanalysis. And Carl Jung developed many theories. I don't subscribe to his theories, but that doesn't mean that in his theories he doesn't have little pockets of partial truth. So he doesn't have the answer to this. I don't have the answer to it either. And that is this synchronicity thing. Synchronicity is a theory that's an attempt to explain the scientific reason why we experience so-called chance events in this reality. And they're beyond merely circumstantial. They're beyond merely coincidental. And I began to notice this in my life, decades ago. So I would go to the library. And what would happen in my life on an ongoing basis, I never knew when it was going to happen or how it was going to happen. But the Lord, what I didn't know was the Lord was guiding me, despite the fact I didn't know the Lord was guiding me. He was doing it largely invisibly. So I would go somewhere. So one time I walked into a public library. The public library was worth a lot to me because it gave me access to the original volumes. So I know who wrote what and who's just BSing and ripping it off. Okay, so I remember, so everything that I talk about, I try to research from a position of high skepticalness. So I go into the public library, and I'm there on a mission, my own mission, I had heard that the Rockefellers, and specifically the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, was spending, you know, millions, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to artificially shape our culture, shape our institution of the family, shape our institution of marriage. So here, we're identifying one of the most powerful elite families in the world, the Rockefeller family. And the allegations have been that they use their money to shape our culture in deliberately non-Christian ways. So I want to know if there's any proof. So I go to the library, and because the library happens to have old volumes and books that the internet would be scrubbed off the internet. And I happened to find they have an original Rockefeller Brothers volume, one of their annual report type volumes published by the Rockefeller Brothers Fund itself. And I'm a speed reader, so I'm in the library speed reading like crazy. And I read in the writing of the Rockefellers their openly admitted plan for altering the female in our society, to alter the perception of the female, to change the core identity of females, their sexuality, their ideas on motherhood, their ideas on the family. They had a very high level plan in which they attempted to totally reinvent and re-sculpt the female. So that's a pretty, intense accusation. So I'm reading in their own writing that they say, we need to make sure that on television shows, feature films, sitcoms, etc., that we're constantly bombarding the American public with images of a female who has autonomous sexuality, in that she has a sex life outside of marriage. We need to glamorize and glorify the female who is working and degrade the female who is a stay-at-home mom. And we need to do all these things in terms of social engineering. We need to have glorifying magazine articles and magazines back then, like People, which glorify and promote the single woman's lifestyle and not promote a married woman's lifestyle. So I couldn't believe that these guys were actually admitting to the very outrageous allegations that were made to them. They were guilty as charged. They weren't hiding it. They were just betting on the stupidity of people to think they don't really mean it. Well, they did mean it, and they mean it today. So that same social engineering project, in its hardest core forms, would be MKUltra or Monarch Mind Control and all the others. But in its soft form, it's the manipulation of social media, feature films, sitcoms, and stuff like that. You make the heroes and heroines of their cultural remodification, and that's how you change mass behavior. So it's not an accident that we wake up all these decades later and we see the same formula is being used right now as what was being used when I discovered this information in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. The same exact social engineering formula is being used now, except now they've already won the battle largely for reshaping the female's identity and also reshaping the male's identity. They had a plan to demasculinize the male, to make the male more feminine in everything. Everything from the deliberate, these people are very, very sophisticated. The problem is we're fighting one of the most sophisticated global operations in the history of mankind, but because our side has refused to listen to God and rebelled against knowledge and wisdom, because our side treats intellectualism, rational ability, logic, and reason as if it was a cancer, because our side has welcomed stupidity, okay, embraced stupidity, and in fact fornicated with stupidity, we're going into the boxing ring with some serious disadvantages. So that's why we keep getting what do you call it when they're fighting? Sucker punched. Our side keeps getting sucker punched by their side because we're unprepared. It's way past time to step up the game. I'm talking about stepping, and that's part of the two prophetic messages I have. One is the prophetic vision in 2012, July 4th, and the other is the July 4th prophetic dream I had recently, a number of weeks ago, in which they're connected. And the Lord gave me a hard message, which if we have time on this program or the next program coming up, I'll tell your audience. And I'm very reluctant to do this because there's so many showmen and sensationalists and hucksters who talk about prophetic dreams and prophetic visions. And so I have to be very careful to separate in people's minds a potentially fraudulent presentation with one that's verifiable and based on truth. So one of the things the Lord said to me in the prophetic dream, I'll just talk. The prophetic dream is to be distinguished from the prophetic vision I had July 4th, 2012, which, by the way, due to the grace of God and programs like yours, literally that message of the prophetic vision literally reached an excess of 129 million people because of various factors that had nothing to do with me that created a media blitz. Okay, so millions of people, over a million people, heard that message in the prophetic vision. Now, in the prophetic dream, very few people know about it because I haven't really talked about it, except now and one other brief occasion. But in the prophetic dream, it's a continuation of the prophetic vision. In the prophetic vision, the whole thing of a great awakening or a biblical awakening, it was all contingent and based on the need for genuine repentance among God's people and quit BSing God and quit playing church and quit the Christian cartoon show and get down to real reality and slug it out in the physical world and slug it out in the spiritual world. But slug it out. Be willing to bleed and take hits or whatever it takes. Whatever it takes, there's no retreat and no surrender. And quit. I am lusting to say the words that I really want to say. I don't think for one moment it would be offensive to God. I think it would be actually a clarification of the communication. It's really an elaboration on the term that I'm dying to say, which is the word everybody knows, BS, the actual word. Because that's, we have traded in sound doctrine, the mind of Christ, and common sense for the whole meaning of the word BS. We got a lot of BS in the so-called houses of God. Not all of them, but way too much. There's no reason to be losing a spiritual battle that Jesus has already been made the conqueror of. So in the sequential dream, and about 7 years or more later, I have a prophetic dream. And just to give you a little bit, because we'll go into it later, the Lord said, among other things, is, we're being given one, God's people are being given one last chance from the Lord. One last chance. That's it. Either we get it on, we do it, we obey him and quit conning and fooling ourselves. We either go into full-fledged spiritual warfare where we mean business, not monkey business. And that's what God is called. He's giving us one last chance. And that doesn't take anybody with a prophetic gift or some supernatural experience to derive the fact that we indeed only have one last chance. Because if you simply use your rational, intellectual, researching mind and look at all the variables that we're faced with, it should be blatantly obvious to somebody with half a brain that we're at the final moment in terms of the technology, AI, the takeover by the Great Reset, the all-pervasive, all-invading surveillance state, the super, super Orwellian agenda, the genetic modification of soulless entities, and on and on and on. And so it gets down to, the Lord said one last chance, and that the Lord wasn't pleased with this acceptance and celebration of stupidity among his people. And that's what I believe the Lord was saying to me. So one last chance, and then he showed me the consequences, either good or bad, and that our future is contingent upon what we do with this one last chance from the Lord, which has been given to us entirely by grace, unmerited favor, and not because of some self-performance or goodness of our own, because we don't have enough goodness to come to the table with God.
Amen to that. Yeah, look, I'll say it. Cut the bullshit.
Yeah, thank you.
It's over. Yeah, I mean, really. To tell people how pervasive and how toxic some of the so-called Christian churches are. Just as an example, yesterday I was in the hospital and I had getting some tests done, and I was hooked up to a flipping IV and wires coming out everywhere. Anyway, they moved me. I had to go to this kind of semi-public waiting room and for a minute because of something that was going. Anyway, in this room was this Episcopal priestess. I don't know what you call them. I don't know. She was like 60 some years old, blue and gray hair, right out of Central Casting, right? As a, what are they? Episcopal priests or priestesses?
They could be
or
anything. And their core belief system, they could be anything.
Right. And okay. So she is talking about the virtues of, and I'm not making this up, about homosexual marriage and the transgenders and how loving and from God all of this is. Okay. And I am getting there was smoke coming out of my every orifice of my body. I'm listening to this. I'm thinking, you're actually up there preaching this. So I was looking at her, and she was talking to somebody next to her. I don't know, maybe a husband or a goofball. I don't know, but man, and I'm listening, and the more I listen, the angrier I got, because I know people are listening to her, and people like that. When, by the way, when I got back into the where I was supposed to be, but they took my blood pressure and they said, "What's wrong with you?" You know, it's like my blood pressure was through the roof. I said, "Man, don't ever do that to me again." You know, put me into the wild. But the point is, you're 100% right. We have been subjected to, I think, the ultimate mind control experiment or operation there ever was. And that's illustrated by the response to COVID, really everything that's happened over the past several years. And you are right on the money with this. And we only have this one chance. And folks, listen to what Paul says. Okay. I'm going to be quiet now because I want to hear a little bit more, but this just confirms to me, this confirms what Paul has been saying for all these years and what he's been writing about and what he's written about. So please listen and I'll be quiet now. I'll back up, but thank you for this. It's all coming together.
Thank you, Doug. So the bottom line here, I like the bottom line. So the bottom line here is, it is absolutely essential that everybody, no matter what your belief system is, but especially people who claim to be Christians or spiritual or conservatives or whatever, especially people who claim to be the carriers of truth, it is absolutely essential that everybody has the full recognition and the full understanding that, yes, indeed, without any shadow of a doubt, there's no argument you can wage that has any substance at all that can erode the truth that I'm going to share with you. And it has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the self-obvious nature of the truth. Here's the truth. Number one, we are in an all-out major attack by an enemy of such massive wealth, technological and scientific understanding that possesses a global apparatus that goes back thousands of years. And this entity, this great reset and the globalist elite that rule it, the trillionaire and billionaire families, they have plotted this for a long time and they've done test runs. So, for example, Nazi Germany with Adolf Hitler was a test run. Who financed Nazi Germany and Hitler? The globalist elite, the international bankers. I give the names, for crying out loud, in my book, The Day the Dollar Died. I name the names of the various banking families that financed Hitler. And so what else did these elite families finance? They financed genetic modification. They financed euthanasia, which means you give yourself the right to kill off the elderly, the diseased, anybody who's defective in their eyes, like Hitler did. You have the genetic right that you gave yourself, God didn't give it to you, to kill off the undesirables. So the entire, if you look at Nazi Germany and everything that went down in Nazi Germany, you had an immersion of occult and occult secret societies, like the swastika is a hardcore occultic symbol that goes back to ancient Tibet and the Tibetan masters and way beyond that. You have the Vril Society, the Thule Society, that occult Nazi sciences that Wernher von Braun, the founder of NASA, the rocket scientist, developed, the V2 rockets. And by the way, everything that I research is a product of not only intellectual curiosity and the desire to find the facts, but there is an enhancement of feature that is available to everybody listening. If you will listen to the Lord, you don't have to be some, you know, giant spiritual person. If you'll simply listen to the Lord and notice when he is guiding you supernaturally, you will begin to see a habitual pattern of information coming your way that is necessary for you to understand and assimilate. And God is sending it your way through various synchronicities, if you will. Apparently happen chance, circumstantial things, but they're not. They've been coordinated and arranged by God. So you go back to Adolf Hitler's Nazi Germany. What did you have? You had the deliberate culling of the herd, where they killed off approximately 35 million people. Not only Jews, but Protestants and others were killed off through gas chambers and ovens. They baked them alive. Not only that, the Nazi mind control scientists and the Nazi doctors, like Dr. Engele, one of the most wicked men ever to be on planet Earth, they performed outrageously sadistic, unbelievably cruel, off the charts scientific torture experiments, MK Ultra style, on the prisoners, young boys, girls, women, men. They were tortured to death under the excuse of scientific experimentation, just like MK Ultra. And then they established a dictatorship, a mind control, propaganda, social engineering dictatorship. And then they produced a genetically modified super race, Nietzsche's Übermensch, which means Superman or Superwoman, you know, the blonde-haired, blue-eyed babies, that whole thing. They produced a genetically, in their eyes, the master race. So this money from the master race people, by the way, is still being funneled all around planet Earth. The whole master race thing is embodied and incorporated in many of the medical procedures that are designed to protect you from getting certain diseases. So they give you a shot of various kinds to supposedly prevent you from getting all these diseases. Well, what that is, if you look at all the doctors, medical researchers, and scientists that are disclosing what's really in those injections, you see that those injections, when you look at it through a sub-microscopic level, the injections are in reality nanobots. Nanobots are microscopic computer bots that float in the human bloodstream. And the nanobots, and we all have a percentage of nanobots in us due to anything from stuff dispersed in the sky, stuff that we eat, coming off another person who doesn't even realize that they're emitting the nanobots. And the nanobots receive their electrical charge from electromagnetic frequencies like cell phones or other forms of EMF frequencies. The nanobots also can receive a charge from the human body itself, because every cell in the human body contains an electrical charge. The nanobots can be powered by any interaction you have with an energy source. Okay, so where that's going is that right now people are all hung up on Mark of the Beast technology. But the problem is they're 35 years behind in their analysis of Mark of the Beast technology. The fact is that all of us, due to all these technologies that are proliferating, all of us are now transmitting and receiving various specific numerical codes in terms of electromagnetic frequencies. And just as an addition, as most people know, but just in case they don't, every single one of us, because everything that we do in this reality is based on a frequency projection from another dimension. Quantum physics and Tesla and other people have proven this. So every single person, you and I, Doug, and everybody listening to your or watching your program, is the product of a specific numerical or numerically identified electromagnetic frequency. Everything in this world is the product of frequency. So because of that, when you understand the frequency, you can give disease, take away disease, you can enhance, you can lower, and through satellites and through other transmitters, broadcasters and receivers, the human body, along with the nanobots, are both broadcasters and receivers. And we're hooked up to a virtual world brain that is monitored and controlled eventually totally by AI or artificial intelligence. And where this is all going is they're going to blame it on AI. AI will be the god. They can make the most Hitlerian, cruel, barbaric decisions of mass annihilation, where they're going to kill off billions of more people based on the decisions of AI. And AI, you know, I understood for the first time what AI was about 3 weeks ago. All AI is, don't mystify it. All AI is thousands of electrical switches in a room. And when you turn the electrical switches either off or on in a room, you create a kind of group electrical decision or a group mind that broadcasts at a particular frequency. These people understand that, and they want to scientifically engineer soulless, genetically modified entities. So everything transhumanism creates is soulless. And a soulless entity is a non-human entity. And a non-human or soulless entity ultimately has to become a demonic entity. And that's where we're heading.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot of information right there to think about. From the from going back to the nanobots, to the frequency, to AI. And I'm not so sure I've heard AI in that context. But when you think about it, it does make sense, doesn't it? With respect to, you know, just, and especially having AI being blamed for whatever cataclysmic or ultimate event or series of events that might be coming up. Interesting. Okay.
And AI allegedly has no, you know, it has no emotion, no spiritual guidance, no intuition. All the imperative things about being a human being. And the only way any kind of technological living or non-living entity can in any way, shape, or form make just, right, fair, compassionate, loving decisions, it is mandatory that that entity, whether it's the transhumanist entity or whatever, it has to have things like the spirit of man, the Holy Spirit, an intuition, an inner sense of right or wrong, a gut feeling, or whatever you want to call it. When you pull that out of a created being, you're basically giving your life and death over to an entity that doesn't give a damn when the day is done, whether you live or die. And if pain is going to benefit, if your internal pain and agony being dying in a concentration camp known as, you see, they won't call it concentration camps. You'll be taken by a psychedelic bus to a 15-minute city. And in the 15-minute city, you'll live, you'll be plugged into a virtual reality with the VR head glasses, and you'll live in an artificial world supplemented by low dosages of psychedelic drugs to give you that kind of ecstatic high. But in the meantime, you're in nothing less than a concentration camp, just like the ones they built in Nazi Germany. This is Nazi Germany, except it's Nazi Germany after decades of scientific improvement, technological improvement, artistic enhancements, flavor enhancements, visual enhancements. So they're very smart. They Disneylanded, if you will. They Disneylanded the concentration camp, and Disneylanded it means they turned the 15-minute city into a virtual Disneyland. And people's minds are so bent and distorted that they can't see the 15-minute city for what it is.
Going back to just a little bit, I read an article about AI in the medical industry, AI making decisions and diagnosis faster than physicians, and that wasn't really the core context of the article, but it mentioned that it referenced the fact that, you know, physicians really may not be needed for for diagnosing patients. AI could do it much more efficiently and quicker, and it had the unspoken aspect of what you just referenced too about, well, you know, euthanasia or the non-caring might be more expeditious for the greater good, so to speak. But having said that, is not AI, wouldn't that be considered, or wouldn't you consider that a demonically influenced or demonic entity, not in and of itself, but possessed by the demonic, built by man, but possessed by the demonic? Is that, would you characterize it as that, or is that giving it too much credit? Go ahead.
No, the way it works is AI, artificial intelligence, is a cybernetic computerized invention or tool that goes back to the Abacus and other kinds of primitive technologies, and goes back heavily to the Macy's conferences sponsored by the Macy Foundation. And this was in the 1920s. And it was very interesting that in the 1920s, via the Macy's conferences, there was a meeting and gathering together and a sharing of information between the world's most premier mind control scientists, the world's heavy-duty neuropsychiatrists, and their sharing of information with the high-level mind sciences and mind control scientists, and then the sharing of information with the highest-level computer scientists, you know, RAND Corporation. That's in the days when the most minimal computer would be the size of your refrigerator. And if you really had a powerful computer back in the 1920s or 30s, it would be like a large refrigerator multiplied by 100 refrigerators in a giant super cold air conditioned room. But so people need to understand that the computing power they have in their laptop or their cell phone quantumly exceeds what 100 refrigerator size computers could do in the 1920s. So it was not an accident that the science of cybernetics, mind control sciences, and it all has to do with programming and language, computer language, source code or code. Well, these early scientists in this field began to realize that the human being, the human brain, could be programmed just as easily and using similar technologies as computer programming. So computer programming is far more similar to mind control programming and programming of people than we realize.
Wow. Okay. Which makes perfect sense. Again, folks, humbly, I ask you this, don't gloss over what Paul is saying. I mean, be very thoughtful about what he's saying. Think deeply about this. You're 100% on the nose on this. And it's something I like to dig deep into, to think about all of this, what you're saying, especially the historical aspect of this too, that you pointed out, you know, the 1920s of the Macy's, the fantastic information. Continue, please, sir.
Well, the one thing, that I've been processing and thinking about, you know, for a long time, as well as it was one of the things that I believe that the Lord communicated to me in the prophetic dream. And that is that, what the Lord said to me, and I'm even reluctant to say that because it sounds so manipulative and cheesy, so I apologize for that. But so yeah, it would be, if I was just to make up this stuff, well, then that would be a flat out lie. I would be guilty of lying to the people if I just made up all this stuff. But equally so, if I didn't tell the people the actual truth of what really happened to me truthfully, at least to the degree that I understood it, if I didn't tell people the full truth of what happened to me, that lie would be equal or equivalent to the lie of making it up. So it's a rock and a hard place. So in order to fully tell the truth, I have to tell the whole truth and not just what is popular to a particular group. So the whole truth is simply this. What the Lord kept saying to me through these variety of communications is that we have one last chance, but we need to step up our game. The way that we're engaged in the spirit, the multidimensional spiritual battle, is somewhat primitive and awkward and kind of like clowns on a professional football field. We're not supposed, you know, there are clowns that sit in the seats with John 3:16. I don't really agree with that, but I'm not going to criticize the guy ultimately. But my immediate takeaway is Christian equal nut, fool, clown. That's my subconscious takeaway. Yeah, maybe God uses it, but I've heard too much of the maybe God uses it and not enough of the credible, rational, sane, believable, and yes, attractive presentations of the gospel that really convert people. I mean, how many people does a guy in a clown outfit at a football game saying John 3:16, how many people are really won to Jesus Christ? How many sex trafficking rings are busted open through that approach? I may be judgmental, but I don't think many.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
The Lord is saying to his people quite bluntly, step up your game, because this is mathematically, logistically, from a military analysis perspective, from a rational historical perspective, what is about to happen is that, you know, I was listening to a bunch of your shows today and yesterday, and I caught the interview you did with Steve Quayle because you had it highlighted, and I dipped into it. And he was talking about the factual reality of an impending World War III and exactly what that looks like. Well, that's stepping up your game. And he wasn't basing it on anything but a factual military analysis of how inadequate, according to the sources that he had, how inadequate and outdated apparently that the American military is when it comes to nuclear weapons and these high-level weapons. And that's a reality. So the question is, you know, we can ignore that or we can deal with the reality. And what I sense that the Lord is saying is that he's given us chance after chance after chance. He's delayed the consequences. I believe the message he gave me in the July 4th, 2012 vision about God's people seeking his face and truly repenting, that God would pour out to whatever degree the sovereign God chooses. It's not open-ended. It's to whatever degree God allows some kind of biblical revival. Well, I believe we got some kind of reprieve. Not a giant reprieve. We got some kind of reprieve from the Lord. We got some kind of divine intervention from the Lord. So I believe in the final analysis, we didn't get heaven on earth. We're not supposed to. We got a limited percentage degree of reprieve, a somewhat slowing down of the enemy and the forces of evil, somewhat. But that's not enough for the Lord, and that's not enough for our survival. What the Lord wants is a total driving out of the deeply rooted powers of darkness. From that consists of underground bases to the disclosure of names that are being protected. That has to do with the disclosure of technologies that are being used against the American people and have been for decades. That has to do with the real value of our economy. How much is America actually worth? Is it worth anything, or is it completely penniless? We have been bombarded with so many lies. Now, The key thing is the Lord was saying, step up, you know, my people need to step up their game and actually win the spiritual war they're involved in. So that means, like you said, cut the BS, you know, churches that either are preaching a Disney fantasy, selling out, looking for the easy way out, doing everything you can possibly do except looking at the ugly face of reality, which is hideous right now. Reality is hideous. It's ugly. If you just do the studies on artificial intelligence replacing jobs, the job sectors where people are going to lose jobs are dangerous. It's flashing red lights about all kinds of jobs. Jobs that people thought were totally secure, like medical jobs and stuff, teacher jobs and stuff. All these entire sectors of the employment economy are going to be taken over by AI. Why? Because AI can be done cheaper, more efficiently, and less money. And our politicians right now, besides BSing us, I don't see a hardcore attempt to fight back, to protect the jobs of women and men and younger generations. I don't see a serious attempt to battle back the globalist corporations that ultimately are stealing all of the jobs. I don't see a serious attempt daily in Congress and in Washington, D.C. to mitigate or to arm wrestle or to tough bargain the bullies. I see our politicians laying down and being rolled over by the Black Rocks and their subsidiaries like Blackstone and these other corporations. Inevitably, this is not, has nothing to do with the supernatural. It's like looking at reality and dealing with it. At the rate things are going with AI, it's going to replace millions and millions of jobs are going to be gone. So what part of that, Mr. Christian, Mrs. Christian, what part of that do you not get? You will be given the promise of a 15-minute city. A 15-minute city is going to be a glorified ghetto. Oh, it may have fancy paint like the interior of McDonald's. The interior of McDonald's was designed deliberately with the flamboyant yellows and the horrible gross orange colors. All the color schemes in McDonald's and other fast food restaurants are designed to excite you to enjoy their toxic food, chemically enhanced. But psychologists were very much involved in the creation of the McDonald's and other fast food franchises' interiors. So after about 15 minutes of sitting in a McDonald's or other fast food restaurant, the human being gets nauseous, excited, and has an overwhelming desire to leave, to exit the restaurant. Why does it have a desire to exit the restaurant? Because it was designed to get you in there color scheme wise, to wolf down your burgers and fries color scheme wise, but then they don't want you to hoard the seats or read books or read newspapers or play with your computer in the interior of McDonald's because that's going to slow up cash flow. So they designed the interior with the flamboyant colors of yellow and red and the other annoying colors that after about 15 minutes, those colors, which previously you could tolerate, they now harass and annoy the heck out of you, so you want to exit. That's all done on purpose. So the 15-minute cities, notice how few, if any, of the so-called 15-minute cities, the UN's paradise on earth, how come we don't see any examples of what these 15-minute cities look like? I've done research on this in the last couple of weeks, looking at 15-minute cities. I see all these artwork projections. I see all these computer animation projections of 15-minute cities. They look wonderful from the computers and the animations, but I have not been able to find, maybe, and I'm pretty good at finding stuff on the internet, but I have not been able to find concrete examples of what these so-called 15-minute cities look like. So you can, that tells me they're hiding what the 15-minute cities look like. It goes back to when I was a kid. My father was driving me around New York City as a kid, and we would drive by what were called in New York City at that time the projects. The projects were government-builded, government-funded housing where they took all the people out of the ghetto neighborhoods and they put them into these massive government projects, which were like cold slabs of cement. They were cold, non-personal, no bushes, no trees, no grass, you know, very austere. Now, my father said to me, these projects, the government projects, failed because when you took the people out of the ghettos and put them in the projects, which went on for miles and miles, when you put the people in the projects and you didn't elevate their behavior and their customs and their culture, like planting a garden or whatever, or not having gangs or not tolerating drug dealers at the elevator in the projects, you just transpose the people with their bad social behaviors into the projects, you just reproduced a ghetto again. It's called the projects. So that always stuck in my mind what a complete failure the projects were in terms of reality. But they sold them like it was paradise on earth for poor people. Well, the 15-minute city, notice how, you know, the Malibu burned down, the Pacific Palisades and other areas of Southern California burned down. Notice how we don't see materially or physically these 15-minute cities. Where are they? Why are they not being shown? Because they're ugly as hell. They are glorified McDonald's-type concentration camps. They're going to be sexy at the first glance, and then they're going to be what they really are, a horror show originally conceived in Nazi Germany.
Geographically, obviously, you're a lot closer to, well, you're basically there, Malibu and that area. What are the plans? I look at that. I look at Maui, different, well, North Carolina for obviously because of the floods, and eastern Tennessee and such. What are the ultimate plans for these areas based on your research, your proximity in your case to the California area there? To me, I'll just add this. I don't think any of those were accidents. I think that those areas were pre-selected, and then what happened. But what comes next, and why hasn't what comes next came next yet? Even in Maui, which has been, what, how many years, too? Anyway.
Right.
So go ahead.
You analyze all this by connecting the dots. The major dot in everything you asked in terms of the question, the major dot is the existence and the reality of the Great Reset, which is a globalist elite, trillionaire, billionaire elite, plan for taking over planet Earth. That's the ultimate foundational truth. If you have problem believing that, then you're a blanking idiot, and I can't help you. You've chose to be an idiot. You've married your brain to idiocy, and you're hopeless. I mean, the time of explaining the basics, it's over. It's not a matter of non-compassion. It's a matter of how many times are you going to be told a coherent warning, and you're going to choose to disbelieve it. So let's look at the facts. All of the similarities between all of these places, like Paris, California. My house, by the way, I have it on video. This massive, massive fire and smoke was coming to us from the north, and it was projected to burn down our community during the Malibu Pacific Palisades thing. It was just coming from a northern area. And I have it on videotape on my cell phone. I probably should have given it to you. And so The thing to understand is that the common theme with all of these things is the 15-minute city, the real desire and the mapped out plan by the UN, the United Nations, to totally get rid of certain areas in terms of these areas being places for human populations and eradicate those areas. And when I say eradicate, I'm talking about get rid of them. And you touched on it. So the common theme in Lahaina, Maui, which I used to go to all the time for research, so I'm really familiar with that area of Lahaina, Maui, Paris, California, Pacific Palisades, the other areas that were hit in California, North Carolina, the superstorms. What were they? Were they tornadoes that were hitting the East Coast?
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So the common theme of all of these things is weather modification technology. Now, people always tell me they don't believe that that's a conspiracy theory. The problem with maintaining that position is that weather modification technology has been in existence and operational since 1941. So, you know, roll it up, put whatever kind of grass you want to put in it and smoke it. The fact of the matter is, it's a fact, it's not an opinion. Weather modification technology has been operational since 1941. So what that is there's a variety of cutting edge technologies that are in usage now. I write about it. I prove it in my book, The Greatest Battle for the Hearts and Minds of Mankind in the History of the World. And in that book, I quote a message that the former head of the CIA, I keep forgetting his name. What's the evil guy, the former head of the CIA?
Evil guy. That doesn't narrow it down. Colby.
You know his name. It'll come to us. The former head of the CIA is giving a lecture to the Council on Foreign Relations, Rockefeller's globalist control group. He's giving a lecture to the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations. He's the former head of the CIA. He's been under all kinds of allegations recently. And he said to the Council on Foreign Relations, and I word for word quote him in my book, The Greatest Battle. He admits openly that they have been using weather engineering. He calls it weather engineering technology to protect us from climate change. So he diverts people's attention to the technology. He doesn't call it a weapon. He calls it a technology, weather modification technology, or geoengineering, where you deliberately disperse particles in the air, as in, he wouldn't use this word, I would. What do we call the particles that are dropped from planes that have fluoride and tranquilizing drugs and magnesium, for crying out loud. Anyway, it'll come to me. The stuff, chemtrails. So he calls chemtrails, geoengineering. The dispersal of chemtrails by jets in the sky is done to stop climate change and the devastation of climate change. I have his quote in my book. Well, if that's the case, then why are the chemicals in chemtrails? Why are they drugs like lithium, a tranquilizer, other metallic substances that affect the neuropsychiatric parts of the brain? Okay. And then this was something that I just happened to glance at. This was like a month or two ago. I was doing research and I happened to go to the front page of a magazine published by one of the world's largest aerospace firms. You would know the name of it, a giant aerospace firm. And right on their front cover, they have a caption that talks about the fact that weather modification technology and directed energy technology was available for you. I mean, if you're a high roller, a nation or whatever, this giant aerospace firm is selling openly on its website technology that most people say it doesn't exist. And they specifically talked about direct energy technology. Well, what really most likely hit these target areas like Lahaina and other places, Malibu or whatever, was a combination of technologies. You had the accelerated firestorm, which can be done by weather modification technology, these firestorms of heat and flames. You have the hurricanes going down like crazy on the East Coast in Florida and stuff like that. In Lahaina, it appears you had directed energy weapons, DEWs, because what a directed energy weapon looks like is when cars melt and disintegrate into white powder, when homes are, all that's left is of the home is the, you know, the fireplace chimney, and it's a bunch of dust and powder. Sometimes you see melted tires. It looks like the devastation of World War II when we bombed Nazi Germany and places like that. It's a total wipeout, and incineration of an area, because the primary weapon that is incinerating these areas are called directed energy weapons. These are not conventional technological weapons. These are non-conventional technological weapons that are employing the Tesla technology. It's interdimensional technology that is using technologies of an entirely different frequency band to incinerate and pulverize and turn into dust Lahaina, parts of Malibu, parts of the Pacific Palisades, North Carolina, and other places. So how are you going to fight a battle spiritually and logistically and informationally? How are you going to fight a battle if you're walking around in completely non-appropriate disbelief of the hardcore technological and scientific facts? The first fact is, this is not new. These technologies have been operational since 1941. In fact, the U.S. military, I guess it was around 10 years ago, published a color brochure. The U.S. Army published a color brochure whose headline was, I know because I wrote about it in one of my books, was "Who Will Own the Weather?" So the U.S. Army is publishing a brochure entitled in giant letters, "Who Will Own the Weather?" And the basic thesis of the article is that the U.S. Army, due to its appropriation of advanced technology, will literally own, manipulate, dominate, and control all weather systems nationally or on planet Earth. In other words, they are saying in the article, what they mean by owning the weather is they mean who is going to control and militarize and weaponize the weather. And of course, the assumption is we are. The U.S. Army is going to weaponize the army, so the weather. So that's where we are. So if you're walking around like some fool with a daze on your look, you haven't stepped up your game. You're really going to get massacred in any serious discussion or debate, and you're going to be refuted. And when you're refuted, are you going to fall apart and cry in your car because you got picked on? Or are you going to blanking, and I'd love to use the F word, but I'm not going to use it, because I'm from New York. I'm a straight shooter. It's hard for me to speak in the language of the pilgrims. But I didn't grow up in a pilgrim myself, as God allows me to, as you do, and everybody with a brain is constantly becoming the new person in Christ. So anyway, that's
yeah. I mean, you grew up in that duck or bleed environment, yeah, right. You know. Yeah. When I hear you talk, thinking back to a decade plus ago, our programs, do you think people today, now given everything that we've seen over the last decade, the events that have taken place in that time period, many of them just horrific events, is there a greater knowledge today among people? Now, I want to differentiate too between people who collect information, which there are a lot of people out there who just collect information but don't do anything with that. But the knowledge that people have today, is it we've got, I sense we're going to be reaching a breaking point here. Some sort of inflection point when the people have had enough. And we're getting there quickly too. They've had enough of, for example, the events that you talked about, that we talked about, the Lahainas and the fires in California, and the weather modification, which is really, if people have to know by now, you either know or you don't. And if you don't, then you're a sucker. But anyway, that aside, we're watching society collapse. We're watching this culture, degradation. I mean, you're seeing mouthwash and toothpaste being locked up in stores because people go in and they rob these stores blind. You got stores closing. You've got this culture war going on right now. And it's obvious. Look, folks, look, as racist as this sounds, you've got these black gangs and black and Hispanic, but primarily black gangs going out and doing this. You don't see a lot. I mean, there are some, but you don't see a lot of white gangs doing this. So we're in my mind, we're being positioned for this race war, which has been long predicted. But at what point, 10 years ago, reflectively to today, do you think people have enough knowledge today to act on? And do you think that people will act on this in some manner? I don't know if it's going to be just sheer friggin' chaos on the streets or what. Is there a difference between 10 years ago and now, Paul?
Yeah, there's a difference because 10 years ago, 20 years ago, almost everything I said to you and things you said, I would automatically be dismissed as a conspiracy theorist. And isn't it interesting, the very words that I, you know, all these operations, these CI operations, there's probably 15 of them that are well known by kids and the younger generation and the movies, anything from The Bourne Identity, which is a number of years old. But there's all these movies and films and stuff that talk about these MK Ultra type operations and others. And by the way, the desire to promote race war is a psyops that we need to resist, because yeah, there are very specific reasons what is driving people to act really crazy. And the first is everybody to whatever degree has been indoctrinated and not educated, and they've been put through a social engineering program and the whole takedown of the white man. And this all goes to the fact that at the very top of the pyramid, we are being ruled by a political group, a financial group, a spiritual group, and, you know, it bothers people, but it happens to be true. Their values are Luciferian. And, you know, when you hear that, I'm not talking about you, but when you hear that, you can't go into instant denial when somebody tells you the truth about the globalist elite that they're Luciferian, because they are Luciferian. I was looking at a picture just the other day. And it was a picture of Rothschild, who his family financed and funded the Illuminati. And he, to whatever degree, is a Luciferian. That was depicted in Stanley Kubrick's movie, which I don't recommend because it is very graphic. But Stanley Kubrick's movie, Eyes Wide Shut, which was filmed in part at one of the Rothschild mansions, where he shows a ritual orgy and a ritual summoning of occult powers. So that's not just a joke with these people. They're serious about it. They're Luciferians. So I look at this picture. It's a picture of Rothschild, a known Luciferian, one of the wealthiest men in the world. And standing right next to him is a female whose name is Maria Abramovic. Now, Maria Abramovic, as obviously you know, is a hardcore Luciferian, a Satanist, a celebrated artist, visual artist in many circles in New York and among the elite circles. She's a celebrated artist. But when she paints pictures, Maria Abramovic, the celebrated satanic artist, she doesn't use traditional paints. She uses things like human semen, menstrual blood, human blood, urine, bodily discharges of various kinds. So she's painting these giant murals, and the giant murals are not painted with paint. They're painted with what really comes down to, the painting becomes a vehicle for a live satanic ritual, because all of the gross materials that Maria Abramovic is using in her painting, like human semen, urine, menstrual blood, and God knows where the blood came from. I don't even want to think about where the blood came from Maria Abramovic's blood in the form of a painting. So
you can't get that also on Amazon, I don't think, but yeah, okay.
She's also apparently the handler of Lady Gaga and a lot of other so-called celebrities who, by their own admission, and if not by their own admission, the testimony is the graphic visual symbols that they use in their concerts. You want to know whether somebody's a Luciferian? Well, look at the visuals that they're displaying at the Super Bowl or the giant concerts they're holding. And when you see, you know, the symbols of Aleister Crowley and the symbols of Satanism and all the blatant symbols of Satan and the more obscure symbols of Satan, gee, that's kind of a indication. It's kind of a map quest to letting you know that they're Luciferian. It's not just innocuous. It's not just by accident they chose these hardcore Luciferian symbols. The same thing with Beyonce and her lover husband, Jay-Z. Apparently they're Satanists by their own visual symbols that they promote. Okay, so Maria Abramovic's this big-time artist, really sick, and a satanic handler for Lady Gaga and others. So why is she in a very close picture? They're standing together, Rothschild and Maria Abramovic, the renowned Satanist artist. The message that one would take away from that is there's some kind of relationship, some kind of alliance between the world's most powerful occult elite, and that's not a conspiratorial sentence, that's a sentence based on observation. There's some kind of alliance, some kind of relationship between Maria Abramovic, the Satanist, Aleister Crowley, and Rothschild. And then you simply do the segues from that, and you go right into the Federal Reserve System. Who created the Federal Reserve System? How many people who created the Federal Reserve System, which I list in The Day the Dollar Died, my book, how many people were in the occult, were Satanists, Luciferians? Was there? I have heard there was, but I wasn't there. So I'm simply asking the question, was there a satanic ritual performed on Jekyll Island where all these elite world billionaires met? I've heard, I don't know if it's true, that there was a pit that had human skeletal remains. Some of them were skeletons the size of giants. And I have heard, I haven't seen it, I have heard that there were pictures of ritual sacrifice where it was alleged that these elite world rulers who came together on Jekyll Island to create the occult magical system known as the Federal Reserve System, where you print money from nothing, were conducting human sacrifices on Jekyll Island. I don't know. Maybe you know, Doug, but it's very weird.
Yeah. No, I don't know specifically, but there has been recent research about that. And to your point about the Rothschild and Abramovic, I saw that same image.
Oh, you did?
And yeah, as a matter of fact, I was going to put it up there. It was with Jacob Rothschild. They were standing in front of a specific painting, and this painting is a couple of hundred years old, but it was Satan summoning his legions. It's an authenticated photograph. It's not edited or anything like that. It's not CGI. I did not realize that relationship there. But to your point about Jekyll Island, in fact, yes, it does bear additional research with respect to that angle of things. And I do think that there was a level of satanic worship down there, or at least, well, I'll just leave it at that, because I think that there was more to that whole era, from the Titanic, which, you know, when people hear about the Titanic and they think of the picture, the movie, and of course the traditional lore behind it, but the fact is, you know, there's a lot wrong with that whole Titanic story, from the captain of the ship back to the ship itself and so on. But I'm digressing from the point. But so all of your points in the remaining, I think we have 6 minutes left for tonight's programs. All of these points that you've made, I think, go back to your original question, you know, or the original statement that we've got to step up our game. We really do have to step up our game. And if we have one last chance, we have to make the most of it. But, you know,
exactly.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, we're called to be spiritual warriors. I agree with that. But we should be formidable spiritual warriors. When you read the biblical account of God sending in Joshua and Caleb into the promised land, the land of Canaan, to take over that land, they had to confront the so-called giants, the genetic giants that possessed the land of Canaan. And so when they went in there, what enabled Joshua and Caleb to be victorious over these so-called giants is God Almighty supernaturally enhanced, if you will. God stepped up the game quantumly in Joshua and Caleb. So Joshua and Caleb began operating in a far higher level of non-religious but reality-based kick the giants in the ass faith. And Joshua and Caleb were able to do that. And so the enhancement of their normative abilities by the supernatural power of God, step up your game time, was this. The actual giants themselves had their perception changed by God, and supernaturally, with the perception of the giants changed by God, the giants began to perceive themselves and see themselves and believe. The giants believed that they were giants. That they were grasshoppers. So the perception altering power of God created a dynamic in Joshua and Caleb where the giants began to see themselves like grasshoppers. And then Joshua and Caleb began to see themselves as giants. So the victory in the battle is connected to the dynamic altering of perception. And see, this is what I'm hinting at with the step up your game. Quit playing this inane, lame ass, you know, game of, and call it spiritual battle. You need to be sophisticated in spiritual battle. The devil comes at you with wiles, psyops of the devil. Joshua and Caleb won an impossible war. They won an impossible victory, which we're being called to do right now. We're called to win an impossible victory. But the only way we win the impossible victory is when we truly use the spiritual weapons dynamically and when we truly use them by faith. Not corny, fake, phony, baloney religious faith, but dynamic reality faith where you tear out the giants from the land. So what needs to happen in America is the spiritual battle must involve the tearing down of principalities and powers and the tearing down of whatever the giants are composed of. And quit copping out and saying you can't do it and all the rest. I could puke, and God can puke. In fact, God himself said it to the Church of Laodicea. He said, I wish you were either hot or cold, but because you're neither hot or cold, I'm going to vomit, a.k.a. puke you out of my mouth. Don't get offended with me. That's the word of God.
And you're not talking about changing prophecy, obviously.
No.
In the Bible. But we can do things to delay prophecy and also to protect our own, ourselves and our own. Maybe that's a cumbersome way of saying it, but nonetheless, we are responsible for the protection of our families, to make sure that our families, our loved ones are saved, are safe and then saved, or saved and safe. But all that said, we also have to go out and make sure that we can bring others into the fold. And I guess that's where a lot of us fall short. And is that what you're saying?
Glad you pointed that out. I am in no way, shape, or forming. I would never say, and I'm glad you brought it up, that we are to change Bible prophecy. Bible prophecy is the sovereign word of God. And in fact, as you know, anyone who attempts to change Bible prophecy, or specifically anybody who attempts to change or alter the words in the book of Revelation, is placed under a curse by God and thrown into the lake of fire. So absolutely not. I would never in my wildest imagination even entertain the idea of changing God's prophetic word or Bible prophecy. Having said that, within the sovereignty of God, within the kingship of God, Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, within the parameters, which are very fixed, of the Word of God, what is true, what is non-true, what we can do, what we can't do, within those parameters, we're free to act, guided by the Holy Spirit, renewed by the Word of God. But we're not to try to be God or make up our own prophecies or make up our own destiny in some kind of New Age false doctrine thing.
Amen. Paul, we're out of time for tonight, but tomorrow we're going to continue this hard-hitting interview. My goodness.